If people are dieting now more than ever before, then why are nearly 1 in 3 American adults overweight? Dr. Gundry, who's helped thousands lose weight and feel younger and healthier than ever, says most people are not getting enough fat-burning MCTs from their food. MCTs are a special kind of compound that, instead of turning into fat when you consume it, turns into ketones, which is a chemical that breaks down the excess fat in your body. So, by getting more MCTs in your diet, you essentially flip a switch that puts your body in caloric bypass mode, which can flush out excess fat and calories. And he's created an easy way for you to activate caloric bypass right at home. It's called MCT Wellness. This powerful blend of fat-flushing MCT powders and antioxidant-rich polyphenols is designed to help you unlock your body's fat-burning, energy-producing potential. What's even better is that it's a delicious drink. I love how incredible it tastes. All you do is add a scoop to water, enjoy, and watch as you start feeling slimmer and more energized. So, if you want to experience a quick, easy, and effective way to melt pounds fast, go to GundryMD.com/energy and order right now to get up to 53% off your regular price order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. Again, that's GundryMD.com/energy.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
What's up, Open Floor Globe? I'm your host, Michael the Pod Pina, and I'm joined on the other line by my good friend, Sports Illustrated senior writer Chris Herring. On today's show, Chris and I are going to do something a little bit different and recommend some of our favorite and least favorite League Pass viewing experiences so far this season. But before we do, a quick reminder to keep your emails coming in to openfloormail@gmail.com. That's openfloormail@gmail.com. We'll try and hit a couple of your wonderful emails at the end of today's episode if there's time, but I have a feeling this conversation could take up the whole show because it's a pretty passionate subject for anyone who watches as much basketball as Chris and I do, either for work pleasure or, as the case right now, a necessary distraction. So, Chris, I asked you to give me your three favorite and least favorite teams to watch this season, and I don't know how you approached such a broad and general request, but I tried my best to steer clear of more obvious answers, and listeners can judge whether or not I succeeded there. But let's kick things off with you throwing a team my way that you're really loving right now and that you're recommending our viewers take in as much as they possibly can.
Maybe it's obvious, but I think a lot of people would pick this team because of one person. I think there's more to it than that. I'll pick the Grizzlies.
Okay. I actually do not think that's obvious, so go.
Okay. I mean, so the obvious part of it is obviously Ja, who I think, you know, has been on the radar for a while, if not for most people, then, you know, by last postseason when he goes off for 40 or whatever he had in the playoff game, it starts to become more apparent. When he takes out the Warriors, it starts to become more apparent. But to me, man, they're interesting regardless, you know, of him, and outside of him, they're still relatively young. And to me, and maybe this shouldn't factor in the league pass, but I like watching teams that aren't static. And so, I mean, part of what makes them interesting to me is the fact that, you know, as much as I love him, as much as I still kind of believe in him, Jaren Jackson Jr. has kind of been up and down. He's still wildly important to that team from a defensive standpoint, but offensively, you know, he's been taking more threes. You look at his game log and it literally is like, you know, two games where he'll be great, two games where he'll really struggle shooting it. Mm-hmm. And so that part of it is kind of hard to really make heads or tails of. Dylan Brooks is back in the lineup, who, when we talk about unpredictable, kind of sandpapery sort of dudes where you either really like this guy or you really hate watching him, because he's playing against your team. That's a part of it. But he's shot the ball really well since he's come back. So that's a part of it. And I'll readily admit, their style of play is interesting to watch. It's, although I had like a love affair with them when they were really difficult to watch during those grit and grind years, where obviously the fan base loved watching them play. And in the same way that the 90s Knicks that I wrote a book about, probably their fans loved watching them play. Mm-hmm. A lot of people did not love that style of basketball. So there is something that's like watching this bizarro Grizzlies team where they're wearing the same uniform that those teams did, but playing a completely different style and playing up and down, playing without a defense half the time. There is part of that that I enjoy just because it runs so counter to everything that they were known for. But they're fun. And they, not to mention, you know, despite basically being a little bit above 500, they've beaten the Clippers twice. They've beaten Denver twice. They've beat the Cavaliers, who have been good this season. They beat Golden State, which only two teams have done that. So, you know, they've beaten good competition, and it's obviously not a team you can just walk over. It's not a team that will, you know, if they make the playoffs, will have gotten there just by beating bad teams. They beat good competition.
Yeah, I mean, Ja, yeah. Ja does kind of, now that I, as you were talking, I was kind of like, oh, yeah, Ja Morant, that is kind of obvious in that.
That part of it's obvious, so that's why I stayed away from him.
Watching that dude play basketball is a true joy. Like, every time, like, I tune into a Grizzlies game, he makes at least two plays where it's just like, I've never seen anyone do that before in my entire life.
Right.
And this, like, he is just a national treasure. But stylistically, you're right, they lead the NBA in transition frequency, so they just they push the pace a lot, and they give Ja and they give some of their other guys a lot of open floor opportunities. The defense is terrible, which can be fun if you're a fan of just high scoring basketball.
Right.
And
that's probably part of it. Yeah.
Yeah, so I wanted to briefly just talk about Dylan Brooks for like 2 seconds, because you said, okay. I thought the way you described him was really funny, like sandpapery. That's a really apt description. I think personally for me, I don't like it. Like I appreciate the defense. I think he's one of the better on-ball defenders in the league. I think he really gets under player skin. Like last night I watched the game against the Clippers and he was just, mm-hmm. I mean, Paul George was having, he was on one, Paul was, but it wasn't easy. Like the shots he was hitting were very difficult because of Dylan Brooks, who is just like mm-hmm. fouling you on every single possession.
Yep.
And just hoping he will not get called for every single time. It's very like Richard Sherman, peak Richard Sherman in the Seattle Seahawks secondary. We're just going to hold you every single time. And you can't call it every time. Can't throw the flag every time.
Right. Right.
But the thing about Dylan Brooks that I don't like is offensively, where he's taking right now. I looked this up yesterday, and I want to see if it's still holding true. He's taking 28.7 shots per 100 possessions, which I know he's only played 4 games, but that company right there, that's like
too much.
Luka, Tatum, Paul George, right. Steph Curry, Brad Beal, Giannis, Trae Young. Like that's the type of shot, the volume that we're talking about. And his teammate right. is Ja Morant. And I'm just like, the show is Ja. And as you said, Jaren Jackson Jr., I really want to see him kind of solidify himself as like a three-point shooting Bam Adebayo. I don't know if he'll ever be that, but that's what I want from him. And I just don't know if you can do that with Jaren Jackson Jr. I mean, with Dylan Brooks on board as well, doing what he's doing.
Still feels like, to some extent, and they've won enough games to where it doesn't seem problematic for them, but such a big part of their offense last year was Ja. And I wrote about this at one point because I think it's one of the things that makes them fascinating with just how good Ja is at generating defensive attention, is that he had the highest rate of what, you know, are kind of known as Kobe assists, where you go to the basket and you normally draw two or three guys that are coming at you to try to stop you. But in doing that, nobody can focus on the defensive rebounding. And mm-hmm. so Valanciunas was just putting those shots back. That was such a massive part of their offense because they were better at that than everybody else. You know, Ja acknowledged, you know, just talking to him, that he sometimes would put the ball off the glass on purpose to try to set it up so that Valanciunas could grab it.
Yeah.
And so that was a massive part of their offense. So when you're not doing that and when you don't have that, or when, you know, Ja's already taking a lot more shots just because he's in transition, He's tired. You know, he's pulling up for jump shots. The offense has to move in some other direction. Like you said, you don't ever want it to move that far in that direction. Dylan Brooks is not the second coming of any of those guys you mentioned. yeah. And so, you know, I wonder to some extent, too, whether it's him trying too hard to kind of find a rhythm just from having been out that long, or them trying to create opportunities for him. So you hope that settles out to where it's, you know, it levels out just a little bit.
Okay, so I'm going to give you one of my favorite teams now to watch. Okay. And I hope this isn't obvious. It might be. It's the Miami Heat. I just love watching really smart defense, smart, physical. Everybody's rotating on a string. When they're switching, everybody knows where they're supposed to be helping out. When they're blitzing, everybody knows the low man is over already. When I mean, they help the helper when they have to do that. They pre-rotate. They're just so intelligent with Kyle Lowry there, Jimmy Butler, PJ Tucker, Bam Adebayo, and they're like self-sacrificial with their bodies too. And I feel like I get smarter when I watch them play, because defense is pretty complicated, especially when it's going full speed. And I'm not saying I see everything in real time, but when I rewind something, I'm like, oh, how did they get that stop there when it looked like Bradley Beal turned the corner and he had like an open drive against any other team in a situation like that? He would have finished right outside the restricted area. But like, well, there's Kyle Lowry. He's already there. He beat it. Like, he knew he was going to be there. He rotated, trapped the box. It's just like the stuff that they do is it's awesome. Their defense is great. Their offense is kind of struggling a little bit. But I just love watching like tenacious, aggressive, cohesive defense. So I'm going with Miami for my first team.
I was talking about them yesterday with somebody on the phone, and I mean, I know it's early. I know that I think technically they're the one seed for right now, I think, in the East. Just by record, it's by like a half game, right. So it's not much. But that, you know, and it's still early on this, so it'll be worth watching. But you mentioned it; their offense hasn't even been great yet. You know, it's early. Defensively, they're kind of locking in, like you said, but they already have a net rating that's like 3 points clear of the next closest team in the East. I think something close to it. I'm looking at it right now: 8.2 points per 100 possessions better than their opponents, which is third in the league. Behind only Golden State and Utah. And then you've got the Bulls after that, but it's a three-point gap. So, I mean, maybe it's too early to really make too much of that. Obviously, the Bulls are playing without Vooch and lost Patrick Williams really early. You know, it's so early in the season that it's too early to even think about buyout stuff later in the year. But, I mean, because of what you're saying and because you figure that they'll get it rolling at some point if they stay healthy offensively, the defense, you can't really replicate how smart those guys are individually as defenders, which you always would have felt pretty good about that. And it was a really obvious upgrade from what they had previously to get to Lowry defensively. So that was what, I mean, I remember being on a podcast or two this summer with friends of mine, and they were, you know, they were like, I don't understand how people love this Lowry move. But like, for instance, in Chicago, someone's like, I don't get how people love this Lowry move, but we're so critical of when the Bulls brought in Dwayne Wade. I was like, what? Because, you know, I was like, I guess if you're only looking at age, sure, but Dwayne Wade was not the defender that Kyle Lowry was. Like, Kyle Lowry's impacting the game in so many different ways, even if he's not
scoring. He doesn't need the ball.
Exactly. Like, he doesn't have to score. And so, and on that team, certainly, I mean, you want him to score, especially if the offense is struggling, but I don't think he has to if they just lock in and defend the way they're capable of. So, good pick on your part. I did not include them, not because it was an obvious choice either. I just didn't include them. But certainly they're going to be a factor all year long if they stay healthy. And Lowry, I think a lot of us expected, like, takes them to a different level. I think a lot of our question was like, does it put them in contender status right away? But I mean, again, if you're going to lead the conference in net rating, I think it's pretty clear that it probably does.
Can I ask you a question about your viewing habits, Chris?
Sure.
So when I watch NBA games, I almost never watch them like live because I can't sit through timeouts. I can't sit through free throws. Like, I just, it like pains me to just sit there and it's just like a total ADD thing for me. And so the only bad thing about the Heat is if when, like, sometimes I have to catch them live for whatever reason, and Jimmy Butler's just like living at the free throw line, and I'm like, can we just not give this guy that call? Like, it's just like, let's play on.
Yeah.
Every time he takes it to the rim, there's like a whistle, and I'm just like, ugh. But besides that, I love watching this team. So give me your second favorite team.
Okay.
Or one of your three. Second one of your three.
Okay. This one probably is obvious. I feel like either you or I will probably have it on our list. Well, the most obvious one, and so maybe it's so obvious that you didn't put it on yours. The Wizards, like, I think they deserve that love. I know when we podcasted about them in the summertime that you felt that they had a chance to be really solid. And I think a lot of us at least somewhat felt that way just because we were like, man, they just robbed the Lakers. You know, and so it was kind of, to what extent did you feel like the depth that they were adding for a roster that was pretty top heavy before? How much does that help them? How much does it help them to improve on defense with some of these guys they'll get to replace Russ? And guess what we've seen? A team that actually defends pretty well now, one that was horrendous on that end of the floor last year, that now basically doesn't give up any threes, doesn't give up much around the basket at all, and is forcing, you know, that's pretty much the sign of a good defense most times, is to force the mid-range stuff as a defense. And to some extent are kind of the inverse of what we talk about with the Lakers now, where they have all this depth. And the Lakers, we kind of watched them look really top-heavy. Granted, they did get Horton Tucker back, and they look a little bit better from that standpoint. But Montrez has looked really good this year. And KCP and Kuzma are about what they normally are. And they don't have Hachimura back yet, and they should get him back pretty soon. Beal has not played all that well to his standard just yet. And the fact that they're basically sniffing around first place with Beal not playing well, put that under things that I did not expect for 2000, Alex. Who's the host now? I can't keep up with all the Jeopardy stuff. All I know is that Aaron Rodgers. All I know now is that Aaron Rodgers probably had very good reason for trying to keep his vaccination status quiet. That's all I'll say. If he was trying to be the host of that show, that listener base, that viewing base. But anyway, it's been a very fun team to watch. I mean, it's a team effort that they play with, again, because Beal's not just carrying them the way that you would hope that he, well, the way that I'm sure he probably wants to, but he doesn't have to. And that's the beautiful thing about it, is that he wanted a team around him. He's got one now. And so it's a very interesting, deep team to watch.
So I'm not trying to throw you under the bus here, Chris, but did you participate in our roundtable on SI.com today about, it was like a monthly check-in on MVP and what other, all the, basically the major awards. Did you participate in that?
I didn't get to. I got a reprieve from Matt, our editor, because I was emailing with you at like 4 this morning, because I was working on a story that I had to turn in for this morning. So Matt was like, don't worry about it, because I know you're going to be up working on that. So why do you bring that up?
So one of the categories was, by the way, yes, I did email you at like 3 or 4 in the morning because I'm a psycho, and you responded within like 5 minutes, and I was like, damn,
yep.
Chris Herring.
We both need more sleep, man. Both of us. We both
yes,
do.
Yes, we do. That is an aside. But one of the questions in the roundtable was, I think, like, give us your boldest prediction, your boldest all-star related prediction. And I said that Montrezl Harrell was going to be an all-star this season.
Woo! That's bringing the heat.
You want bold, I'll bring bold. That's what I do.
That's bold.
So I think he's 6th right now in Basketball Reference's MVP tracker. I looked it up to see how many all-stars have ever averaged fewer than 29 minutes a game, and there were like 42 in the history of
really?
The league or something like that. Yeah.
There were that many? Goodness.
Yeah. So I was like, okay, he's averaging like 18
I like
and
it, though.
8. Yeah, I mean, okay, so the case is basically like, he's just the most efficient player in the league, like straight up. He's like 3rd in PER, 4th in true shooting.
Hey, man, I'm not giving you any guff about that, because I think to some extent, even hearing that response to that question, first of all, is interesting. It's a talking point, which gives you an opportunity to talk about how interesting he is, the Wizards are, how ahistorical that is, given what you just said. And I did the same thing. Like, I think the last time I podcasted with Zach Lowe, he kind of ribbed me, like, playfully, but he was like, you picked Rudy Gay as your sixth man of the year? And I'm like, okay, but I, again, kind of used it as a touching off point to explain that, like, I think finally addressed kind of what they didn't have on their bench last year. And look, and by the way, and I'm going to plug this because damn right, Rudy Gay played in his first game of the season yesterday.
I'm glad you're doing
22 points off the bench, having not played at all, like his first game of the season with a completely new group. He did not play in the preseason. So is he going to win sixth man? No, I'm pretty sure he won't. I'm relatively sure that Trez probably won't make the All-Star team either. Who cares?
Probably not.
We'll be wrong. But, like, we can be wrong and still sound smart within the context of what we said, which shout-outs to people that can sound smart while being wrong.
Being wrong and sounding smart. I just want to get that tattooed. Now, maybe not tattooed. I'll get a T-shirt that says that. How about that? I also had Wes Unseld Jr. as my coach of the year after a month. And yeah. That seemed like a no-brainer to me. Like, I don't think that was a hot take at all. I mean, they lost last night, but they had the fourth best defense in the league heading into last night's game. I think they dropped to eighth. They had the best record in the Eastern Conference. Like, nobody expected them to be this good. Like, I was very optimistic about their offseason, and I didn't expect this.
Like, the only thing I could even say in response to that is, like, if you're really impressed with what the Cavs are doing or the Bulls or someone like that. But if you're doing that, I feel like that's almost based more on, I don't know. Yeah, I guess you could make this argument with the Wizards too, where it's based more on what the executives did during the offseason to really overhaul those teams. Now, the Wizards certainly are way different, but it's still a first-time coach. And I still don't think anyone expected them to be leading the conference. Like, if you'd asked me before the season, who's more likely to be leading the conference after 15 games, the Bulls or the Wizards, I would have said the Bulls. So shout out to the Wizards. Shout outs to Wes Unseld Jr. They're really fun. I enjoy watching them play.
They are fun. Okay, so my next team is, and I've talked about them a lot on the show, so I apologize, but the Los Angeles Clippers. I love watching the Clippers, in part because even though they lost last night, they've been playing really well, and they've been making me look smart because I wrote before the season that they were going to be really good.
Yeah.
Paul George is just having a magical season. I mean, the shots that he's hitting are just absurd. I talked about it a little bit earlier with Dylan Brooks guarding him. I mean, the step backs, the, like, stepping through double teams, splitting double teams, and still finishing over a third defender. It's just so, like, satisfying to watch him. I don't even know how to describe it. He's just so smooth when he plays, like, and he's, like, drawing to, making the right reads, not forcing anything, really. I love watching Paul George play basketball. I love the confidence I'm seeing in a lot of guys who've had ups and downs throughout their careers. Like, Reggie Jackson hoisted 17 threes in a game this season.
That was wild. Watching that game,
I just love it. Like, I love his fearlessness. I love Luke Kennard, man. Like, Luke Kennard's more confident than ever. I've always wanted him to just be like, I'm just gonna pull up. Like, if a man is dropping on a pick and roll or a DHO here,
they need him to do that.
I'm just gonna pull up. It's gonna be there's gonna be a tight squeeze here. It doesn't matter. I'm gonna hit the shot, and he's been doing that, and he looks great. Terrence Mann, I've joked, was a top 75 snub. And I love watching Terrence Mann play basketball. I think he's one of the best on ball. Like, they traded Patrick Beverley and they didn't lose anything because of what Terrence Mann brings on the defensive end. And he's like their own Mr. 94 feet, just one of the better backcourt pests, in the entire league. And screening him is virtually impossible. And yeah, like, I also just, I think it's fun when a coach like Ty Lue is just willing to go small, willing to play. Like, I know they're hurt right now with Marcus Morris not available and Serge Ibaka basically out of the rotation because Isaiah Hartenstein's looked terrific. But, like, when Zoo, when Zoo and Hartenstein are on the bench, like, Brandon Boston was playing the five last night against Jaren Jackson Jr. I'm just like,
I was watching.
Okay,
that. Yeah,
yeah. Let's do it. Let's roll here. So that's just it's just fun.
It was a thing.
It was a thing. It didn't go well, but it was fun. That's like what it's all about. So the Clippers are my team.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's funny because, like, as much as I was watching that with Boston trying to defend him, and I was talking about Jaren Jackson, good games, bad games, that was not a bad game from him because, yeah. But Hartenstein, like, you just get revelations with that team because they're willing to try so much stuff. Hell, even with Bledsoe. I mean, it's just, it's, everything is kind of, it'll be something that in theory you're like, nah, that there's no way that should work. I mean, I feel like that was a whole year of Reggie Jackson last season. It's like, there's no way that should work. There's no way it could keep working, and then it just keeps working. So I like seeing them be willing to try stuff. They needed to find a way to just try to make this work, to do something that is different, to try to kind of keep this patch together until you hope that maybe Kawhi comes back at some point. I mean, one of the things I felt that was most interesting about the way you've kind of analyzed them is that you were pretty open in saying they could be rough this year, or they could be back in position to kind of do what they were doing last year. But the variance, or the type of variance that you see with a team like that, that is willingly telling you that we're going to kind of rely really heavily on the three and just kind of, you know, on one guy that can carry the load, but can he do it for a whole year? Can he do it as the lone guy without Kawhi there? It's kind of readily accepting the fact that, like, yeah, we're just embracing this come what may, but a team that defends the crap out of you and can get really hot. And so I'm all for it. I mean, I think that they probably do need Kawhi to put them over the top when it's all said and done. But
yes, they do.
I also really enjoy just watching them play as is. And, like, it is really cool to watch Paul George with a lot of the criticism that he's taken, and I think rightfully so, the last couple of years. So just watch him. He does this every year where he has a stretch like this, but it'll be really cool to see him have, like, a full season like this if it keeps rolling this way.
Okay, give us your third team, Chris.
Okay. I thought this was going to be one of yours. I actually thought this is where you're going when you were talking about, like, most obvious. We thought each one of ours would be obvious, and then it hasn't been. Cleveland. I think it's Cleveland, and it's not something that I even think twice about. So much attention, and I think, again, rightfully so, has gone to Mobley. Now Mobley's out. And so it was funny. You know, I was talking about writing something about Cleveland, and immediately was like, call it off, not doing it anymore. Because Mobley's gone for a couple weeks. It's like one of your favorite TV shows going off the air for a couple weeks for a hiatus. And I'm like, damn, man, I don't want to watch this anymore. Well, obviously, if it's not on, you can't watch it. So, you know, that was my thought. And then they're playing the Warriors. And the Warriors, by the way, when you talk about obvious teams, like, we could have mentioned the Warriors very easily, but I think that's so obvious it wouldn't have been fun to mention. So, Steph by himself is worth the price of admission.
So when I said obvious, I was literally only talking about the Warriors. I'm just going to that's a confession for my...
Like, the Warriors, like, I had them, and I'm like, that is so lame. I just pulled them off the list immediately. It's obvious that they're, you know, you can't miss watching them play. So because of that, when they play the Cavs, I want to watch. Cavs have been a team I've been interested in all year anyway, and Mobley's not there. And so my expectations, I think my friend Jared Dubin posted a video the other day of Mobley, and it was like 12 plays that he made in the fourth quarter alone. I think like 8 of them defensive, where it was like it clearly saved them points. And it's one of those things where people want to write off stuff as small sample size when you see that a team is like 25 points better per 100 possessions without somebody, which, granted, 25 is a massive swing, so probably is some element of small sample size. But then you watch something like that where Jared is posting 12 plays from one quarter where they all impacted the score in some way from a rookie. Like, he's that important to that team. So they've been fun for that reason, and I will say mostly that reason. But even without him, they're still really interesting, and I kind of feel like this is such a big opportunity for them to learn a lot about what life would be like without Colin Sexton and just kind of handing the keys to Garland to some extent, which is an experiment. And, like, you know, I think yesterday was kind of rough for him, at least certainly the second half was rough for him. But he's a very, very good player. This is a team that we've seen Rubio go off for 40, basically, against the Knicks. It's a team that has, you know, Chetty Osmond really looking a certain way for the first time in his career. As
a
far
certain
as
way.
Well, love
how you put that.
Looking good for
the first time in his career. Wow. Incredible. Good for him.
Something where I think think about those post-LeBron years where that fan base was looking for something, anything to be excited about. And, like, actually, this is the way that I think when you wear the rose-colored glasses as a fan, as a Cav fan, you probably thought this is the way he was all the time. So now when he plays like this, it really feels great because he's actually shooting it well. You know, there's going to be growing pains because Mobley is so important to what they do. And Allen was out last night too, by the way. So by growing pains, I mean like when you get outscored 36-8 or whatever the hell it was in the fourth, and where Steph is outscoring you, doubling your score by himself in one quarter to come back and win a game in what was probably historic fashion. So they're going to be really nasty growing pains like that, particularly when Mobley's out. But it does feel like they're putting something together. It does feel sustainable to me when their defense is out there, even when Mobley's not there, when they're not fouling people left and right. Mm-hmm. Where their defense looks real to me when he is out there, certainly. So they're already growing. They already have more room to grow, seemingly, just by having him there and by having Jared Allen there. I really like him, and I really enjoy watching him play, even when Mobley's not there.
Yeah, I do too. Evan Mobley, Rookie of the Year. You know, such a bummer that he's sprained his elbow. Enes Kanter, really, that's like his entire impact on this 2021-22 season, is injuring Evan Mobley. I'm like,
damn, man.
Thank you, Enes. Ricky Rubio has just, it's just so much fun to watch him like flourish. I don't think anyone, like, his career ultimately has not gone the way that we thought it would whenever he was coming out of Spain, how many years ago that was, I don't even remember. He has the torn ACL.
Expectations were so high. Yeah.
Crazy expectations. He was a prodigy, really. And just this is like an opportunity to just appreciate what he brings to the table and how valuable it is to have a table setter like him, especially in this context where everybody's so young. And like, he lets Garland be Garland, and Garland's having a really wonderful breakout season. The team is just better when he's on the floor in every possible way. So shout out to Ricky Rubio, who's a joy and makes, you know, two or three passes a game that are just phenomenal.
Still.
So, yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, like, I also love Jared Allen, I want to say really quick. Like,
yeah,
watch that man switch out on a wing. Not all ball handlers, but, like, most, he can like hold his own. He's pretty good. So I love Jared Allen. He's a big reason why their defense has been successful. It all comes back to Mobley for me, though, and it's like,
yep,
it's a bummer that dude's hurt. It's a huge
I hope
bummer.
He's back real soon. Yeah.
Okay, my last team. This is definitely outside the box here. It is the Sacramento Kings.
I thought about them. That's so funny. Okay. Go ahead. I want to hear why.
I mean, they've been disappointing. I thought that they would be better, honestly, than they've been. So they've been a little disappointing, which is a bummer. But, like, Halliburton is just a joy. He makes all the right passes. He has this nasty floater. Gets everybody involved. I love watching Davion Mitchell and Buddy Hield like enter the game at the same time off the bench. That's such a funny, like, synergetic backcourt tandem. It's like they're the exact opposites in so many ways. I'm not
very
saying that Davion
so.
Mitchell's like the worst shooter ever, because Buddy's one of the best shooters ever, but like
offense, defense.
Right, exactly. So yeah. It's just funny, like when they come off together, and I'm waiting for Luke Walton to just play Harrison Barnes at the five, and then go Halliburton, Mitchell, Buddy, Fox, Barnes, because those are like, I mean, Rashawn Holmes is really good, but those are, I think, probably the five best players. Actually, the five players I want to see play together. I'm not gonna say they're the five best players on the team. The one thing about this team that's particularly disappointing, and I see it just as someone watching the Celtics with Jason Tatum, is De'Aaron Fox. Like, I just anticipated him being better. And I don't, maybe that's just not fair on my part. Like, I expected his shot to be a little bit more accurate. There's been some weird body language
stuff.
Yeah, sure. Exactly. I'm not mad. I'm just disappointed, man. Like, but like, there's some weird body language stuff with him that, I don't know.
He gets like, really flustered when he feels like, I mean, and this is not, he's not alone in this, but like really flustered when he doesn't get foul calls. And it's just, I mean, I've watched several games where it's just like, you know, it's just like the air comes out of the room when he doesn't get a call. And you would hope it's not impacting effort necessarily, but he's just had a really rough season, and it kind of feels like with each progressive loss or call that he doesn't get, that it just kind of worsens sometimes.
Yeah, and I don't want to read into this too much, and whatever, I'm definitely wrong, but when Harrison Barnes hit that buzzer beater three in Phoenix earlier in the season, for whatever reason, I noticed that like everybody on the team was running over to give Barnes like a bear hug, and Fox was just kind of like, cool. And it's like, okay, yeah. It kind of stinks.
It's a little
like,
bit
I like seeing people happy I like seeing people happy, period. But like in a spot like that, like watching Halliburton's joy, it's like I would love Fox to be as excited in a moment like that.
That stuff carries over. Can I say one thing, and then I know we got to move on with it?
Yeah.
We had you, me, Rohan, Jeremy Wu, we had a lot of conversations because neither here nor there, but when we ranked the top 100 players, we initially, like when we looked at it before we kind of figured out exactly what we were doing, we had more Kings players on the list than any other team, I want to say, which you wouldn't expect that. But when you look at them individually, that's kind of what you see. And you mentioned several guys that are good. And like, oh, by the way, Rashawn Holmes, who when we're talking about kind of dark horse all-star guys, statistically, like he probably should be in that conversation, but doesn't have that reputation. And I feel like doesn't get that recognition because it's the Kings and they're so much less than the sum of their parts, seemingly. And obviously I don't think Walton's done a great job there, but even beyond that, there's just something to it that doesn't click for me. But I watch a lot of their games because they are really intriguing to watch, even though they don't win the games.
Yeah. Okay. Let's pivot towards teams that are not tickling our fancy so far this season. And again, I tried to be not so obvious, but I'm going to give you my first team, and it is obvious. I'm sorry. There's no other way to go about it. It's the Houston Rockets.
Yeah, they were on mine too.
It's just like it's unavoidable. Like, I watched them play the Thunder earlier this week too. Because you did too. You watched that game?
I did too because I knew we were going to ask this question on the podcast. And I'm like, which team do I enjoy watching less? But I like watching the Thunder, and that's the thing is like I don't enjoy watching the Rockets, and it was so clear in that game that I just don't enjoy watching them, and it. I thought I did at the very beginning of the season, and I don't.
They stink. Like, they are. Like, I didn't want to just, like, pick a bad team because I like watching some bad teams. It's not about that. It's just, like, the way they play, which is to say that they have no way to. Like, there is no way they play. And it just honestly, like, boggles my mind. Like, they don't know what they're doing. They don't know how they want to defend. They don't know what style they should embrace. Kevin Porter Jr.'s drives are just like a staircase to nowhere. Şengün, who's fun, is averaging fewer minutes than Daniel Theis, and I'm like, why? Why is it? Why? Like, can someone explain that to me? I don't get it at all.
There's like one guy that I consistently enjoy watching play for them, and it's basically Tate. And it's like after that, because he's gonna play hard no matter what. He tries to defend, which is a pretty, you know, it's like a fool's errand with that team. But, I mean, he's out there working. He's efficient. It's really hard for me to wrap my mind around what they do. And, like, at least with the other teams, you see progression. At least with the other teams, you see an occasional win that they're not supposed to end up with. And in this case, it's been 13 straight losses, and most of them aren't competitive in the slightest. Or they are for 2.5 quarters, and then the other team remembers, oh, crap, we're playing the Rockets. We got to come back and win this. And, like, even when with the Thunder, they take those games and, you know, they'll be down by 20 and they'll come back and beat the Lakers. And they'll do it again the week after that. And there's just none of that with this team. And it's just hard to watch. And I was exactly where you were, where I did not want to pick on a team that had a horrible record because that's obvious. Again, trying to stray away from the obvious. I couldn't come up with any reason. Like, I would have been just doing – I would have just been not including the Rockets on this list just to save, you know – to spare feelings, and they're just easily the hardest team to watch right now by far.
Yeah, so you know how you'll watch a film and you'll say this actor is not in the same movie as everybody else? Like, Nobody told Viola Davis that this was actually a slapstick comedy and she's trying to win an Oscar.
Ooh, ooh, God.
That's what I feel about Eric Gordon. Like, he's just doing his thing. He's shooting whenever he touches the ball. He's attacking a lot. He's leveraging his outside shot to get to the basket. He's like playing well, but it's just like not as a part of a basketball team. And it feels like every three that he hoists is just like a rescue flare, and he's just like on this deserted island and really wants
this
every
for a
other
story
GM.
That you want to write about him. This is written so well, and you're talking, not even writing. Holy hell, a rescue player!
And it's like he's begging to get out of there, and he's begging 29 other GMs to please look at me. I'm good in this like dumpster fire of a situation. I still got it. Please, please, please trade for me. So it's just like weird stuff like that. And Jalen Green, definitely don't want to be too judgmental about him. Because he's played like 2 weeks of basketball as a pro, 3 weeks of basketball, 4 weeks, whatever. The pull-up three, he's embraced that shot. He's taken it. He's got the green light. He's super fast. And this is just not, I don't want to say he's like, I'm definitely not saying he's a bust. Absolutely not. But Scottie Barnes and Evan Mobley going right after you, it's just tough. You look at those two,
yeah,
and you're like, these two are going to be two-way forces for like a decade. And Jalen Green, there's just a little bit more of a question as to what ultimately he will be in a winning environment. So that just stinks.
That's a big part of it. And I'll say this and move on because, like I said, I know we got to get rolling. That's a big part of it for me is that even with the Pistons, like Cade, and I think probably because he missed the first couple weeks, like, that's reason to at least be engaged to want to watch a struggling team. By the way, the Pistons just had a win, which you can't say for the Rockets. But watching Jalen Green is harder than I thought sometimes. And like you said, there's going to be the growing pains, but some of it is just the shot selection. And it doesn't feel like there's a rhythm and a flow to what they do. It's just kind of like, oh, it's my turn to take a shot now. And it's my turn. And it's just kind of like, come on, y'all. Like, it's the basketball can touch everybody at some point. But yeah, it's hard to enjoy a lot of these games they're playing in.
So did you have, for the record, did you have Houston as one of your three teams?
Yes. They're right here.
Okay.
They're one of my
three.
Wonderful. Yeah, absolutely.
That's perfect. Perfect.
We save time that way.
Yes, we do. Okay, let me give you my next team. And I'm able to read a listener email and fold it into this, which is just very convenient for everybody. So I want to read this email from Juan Pablo, who writes, "Hey there, Michael, Rohan, and Chris. Listening to the last episode where y'all spoke about some players that made leaps in their game, I thought Jalen Brunson would have been a good mention. He has been playing stellar this season, and while he has shown glimpses of being really good, he has been consistently great for the Mavs at a moment where a strong second or third option, depending on what Kristaps Porzingis you get that day, is sorely needed. Do you all think he could develop into the secondary playmaker that we need alongside Luka? He'll be looking to get paid once that opens up, and I hope the Mavs front office will do the right thing and bet on him. Keep up the great work, Juan Pablo." So, yeah, I love Jalen Brunson. Love watching him. Love when he's on the floor with Luka. Dallas's offense is basically unstoppable when he's on the floor with Luka, and Luka's hurt right now, and Jalen Brunson is still kind of just, he hasn't really skipped a beat so far. It's only been a couple games or one game, I think, but he's just having a great season as he did last season. A little bit better statistically, I think. Not as efficient, but the role is a little bit bigger. This is going back like a couple of years for me. There's something about the Mavs. I'm so bored when bored maybe not be right, because they have Luka. I love Luka. I'm not trying to hate on Luka.
No, I hear you.
They're predictable is what I'll say.
Yes.
On every possession. I know what they're going to do. I know how the defense is probably going to play it. I mean, the defense, if they're smart, they're going to switch it up. They're going to switch their coverages up, their pick-and-roll coverages. They're going to blitz Luka. They're going to drop. They're going to hedge. They're going to switch. They're going to do everything. They're going to try to take away the step back to the left. I just know all that, and it's just like, Right. Luka feels inevitable in a lot of ways, and so I feel like I don't need to watch this team as much as I was hoping I would because of Jason Kidd, and the offense has just looked even more blah than I don't know. Do you kind of get what I'm saying? I feel like I'm being unfair to this team.
I mean, I'll put it this way. I get exactly what you're saying. I am not a huge fan of like, oh, I got to, you know, race to watch these games. I think you and I both make a point to watch all these teams, even the really bad ones. Sadly, I know for me, yes. I try to watch all of them at least once a week, you know, and try to catch when I can. Most teams twice a week, at least for a half or something. I don't really look forward to watching Dallas play, which is a wild thing to say, given that they have, you know, at times a top five player on their team, that like a young top five player on their team. So that kind of speaks volumes about the rest of the roster. I'm right there with Juan Pablo. I mean, I wrote a piece about Jalen Brunson last year, just about him. And I remember I kind of did that misdirection framing where I'm like, you know, the Mavericks have like an all-star level point guard who's just kind of dicing teams up right now. No, I'm not talking about Luka, you know, which obviously was overselling it. And that was the point. But he's been really good like this for a while. And it's kind of raised the question of like, how much are you going to pay this guy? Because he's really good. He could be the difference between winning a championship or not, but I don't know if he's that difference for this team. Because no, to answer Juan Pablo's question, I don't think he's like, I think they need another guy that basically does what he does in addition to him, and you probably need KP to play the way he's been playing lately. I just don't think Brunson's big enough, tall enough, really, in a series to kind of make this sort of impact repeatedly. Because keep in mind, a couple years ago, he wasn't in the playoff round that they lost. Was there last year. I just kind of feel like because he's been this consistent and that they've still kind of been what they've been, and granted, they've, you know, wins-wise, they've been fine this year so far, I just kind of feel like he's not going to elevate you even further because this, I mean, he's been playing really well for a while. So I kind of feel like they need one more guy, and I don't know how they get that guy. It's helpful to have Porzingis playing better is all I'll say. You know, because if it weren't for that, I'd really be kind of down on their prospects. But you figure there's room if he's going to play more consistently and he's going to be healthy.
I wonder if they'll trade him, honestly, because I just don't know what the market's going to be. I know a lot of teams don't have cap space, but this dude's an unrestricted free agent. Like,
yeah, and he's really good.
He's really good. And yeah. I don't know, you know, Dallas has got the supermax with Luka kicking in. Kristaps is still on his max. I'm sure at some point they would like to clear the books for Luka. Tim Hardaway was just paid again. So,
yeah.
Tough times in Dallas, even though I think they have a winning, I mean, they definitely have a winning record. But I don't know. They need more stuff, and I don't really buy them as a true championship contender.
Yeah.
Okay, give me a team that just makes you throw up in your mouth, Chris.
I won't say that. I mean, it's funny. Like, I did outside of the Rockets, I did try to pick teams that are at least decent or at least on paper decent. I'll start with this one, though. Indiana, who, if anybody's listened to me on other podcasts for the last few years, man, I write about them once or twice a year to the point where I had a Pacers fan. They're like, do I sense that you're a Pacers fan, Chris? Are you a down low, low key Pacers fan? I was like, no. and what I think it's actually really interesting, man. If you look at the teams I picked for the most part, they're all basically for this conversation, they're virtually all East Coast Midwest teams because like I'm getting old. I'm 34. I'm getting old. I get tired, man. I watch the West Coast teams. Like I said, I'm not turning the Warriors off ever, but I get sleepy. All these teams are in the Midwest or in the East Coast. The Pacers are a team that, like, they were very convenient to watch as a guy that lived in the Midwest. And I like teams that play defense more than offense. Like, I have a soft spot for them. So that was the case for a while. And the last couple of years, that really has not been the case. And now it's been the same team, like, the same way that I kind of complain about some of these teams that just never change stuff up. The Mavs have kind of been the same more or less for a while now. The Portland Trail Blazers have been a team that I'm just not that enthused by. I did not include them on my list, by the way. But I get that vibe with the Pacers, too. Like, Miles Turner, God bless him. I understand he's valuable in this league. He has value. He has had the same 13-6-3 stat line at this point for like 6 years running. And I wrote a story about it last year. And wouldn't you know, I think he might be averaging like 13.5, 7, and like 3.5 now. It is the same. It is one of the most historically like consistent stat lines, box score stat lines, for every year for a guy his age ever. I think he's second on the list. I think Valanciunas is the only guy that's had like a more static stat line than him from year to year. And that just kind of is how I feel about this team, where it's like they're always kind of injured. They always have a wing guy that can go out and get you like 20, 22 points. And then they've got another wing guy that's really talented, but is probably going to be injured. And they've got Sabonis, who doesn't really seem like a perfect fit with Turner, but they're not ever going to trade either one of them. So it's just they are what they are. And this year is like a team that doesn't quite finish games, a team that loses to the Pistons. You know, granted, they'll beat the Jazz and give you just enough hope, but they turn it over a lot. They're not stopping anybody on defense. And it's, again, we talk about bizarro teams that like don't fit the ethos of what the franchise has generally been with the Grizzlies. The Pacers used to be a team that locked teams down. Now it's just kind of this team that runs up and down, or doesn't run up and down because they're not playing that fast. But, you know, they're not really stopping anybody, and their games play out the same way, and they're right around 500, and it's just not good enough. And they need a shakeup in the worst way. We talked about this a little bit last week. I don't know what that shakeup will be at some point. Do they get rid of Sabonis? Do they find somebody that wants to take him? But I used to really enjoy watching them, and I just kind of don't anymore. I don't.
So, confession, the Pacers were my third team, too.
Okay.
I'm just so uninterested. Like, you said basically everything I was going to say. Well, like, Miles Turner, I just know what he is. I know he's shooting the three ball better this year. I don't think that's a real thing, because
if he could play the Knicks every game, he'd be set.
Sure.
40 and yeah. 25 against them. But, yeah, it's the same thing every year.
It's like, I was excited at the start because of Rick Carlisle. I wanted to see how he would impact things. And basically, he just made them a lot slower, which is cool. I think they're dead last in transition frequency, which is just like a Rick Carlisle staple. And if you've watched the Dallas Mavericks for the past decade, you'll just see Rick Carlisle screaming at his point guard to slow things up after the team gets a defensive rebound. And that's just not the most fun thing to watch. It's just like I've seen this movie before. I know all these characters. Chris Duarte is really interesting for them. And when they're entirely healthy, I want to watch. I want to see TJ Warren there. I want to see 100% Caris LeVert there. And that'll be fun. And I think that, you know, they can be pretty good. I think they have the talent for sure to win a playoff series. Beyond that, not really. That's it. And Sabonis to me just seems like he's just such a low tier all-star. And I don't mean that to disparage him at all. I really don't. I just think that, like, if he's your best player, and I think he is, what are you doing? Like, what are you doing as an organization? And there's no one in the pipeline who can supersede him, who's young, because they drafted a 24-year-old. So, yeah, it's just like, what is the future? What is the present? It's all very meh. And I'll watch that team play for sure, because it's my job, but I'm just not ever super pumped about it. I'm not going to lie.
I'll watch you because it's my job. Damn. you want to get to the last one? Because I know we're probably running up against it here.
Chris, I think that was it, wasn't it?
No. Because we both had one team each that we both had on the other list. So we only picked two. You want to give the last one real quick?
So you have another team.
I still have one more team.
Okay. I'm sorry. You give your team. See, this is what we were talking about at the top. We were up at 4 a.m. So our brains are a little foggy. Man. You give your last team then.
You know who I'm struggling with lately? Where it's like, what's the point of watching this game? The Knicks. Like, let's be real here. They've had like six games in a row where the starters get washed, and then the bench basically saves the day. But then in some cases, Tom Thibodeau puts the starters back in and they get washed right after the bench saves the day. And so now lately it's become this question of like, okay, well, who's Tibbs going to end the game with? But also, okay, how much longer is Tibbs going to go with this starting lineup? Which is funny. A lot of the Knicks fans are like, man, we should have known something was up when all the Celtics fans were telling us that this backcourt wasn't good. And I don't I said that one especially for you. I don't think it's that they're not necessarily good, but like that they can't, they probably can't fit together, which again, Celtics fans probably knew that already. It was obscured for the first several games because they were just so hot from three. Kemba was not needing, you know, every other night off at the time, or maybe he did need it. And they, you know, Tibbs joked about it in the offseason. He's going to play, you know, that he wasn't going to be taking the nights off. They clearly need some sort of shakeup with the lineup, but will Tibbs do it? Will he not do it? Will he ever give Obi Toppin more playing time? Is it that Mitchell Robinson being back in the lineup has kind of clogged things for Julius Randle to some extent, who has not looked really good the last several games, and his decision-making has not looked really good? And it's a team that doesn't really have an identity outside of, okay, we're going to shoot more threes, but we're not stopping anybody, which I don't know if they win with that identity for the whole season. I don't know. Maybe, but they've been just very blah, and they've lost a couple games to the Magic. I don't know. I just haven't enjoyed not watching them adjust to anything.
So the Knicks were an honorable mention for me. Their starting five's defensive rating is 119.2. So that's the worst defense. That would be the worst defense in NBA history by like a significant margin. And yeah, I mean, everything that you said, like, I knew that the pieces that they brought in would really hurt what made them so successful last season. And, you know, they lose Reggie Bullock, who is important. They add Evan Fournier. They add Kemba Walker. Some of the young guys are, you know, playing a little bit. And I personally think that if these players, Obi Toppin and Emmanuel Quickley, those types, were in Sacramento or Minnesota, no one would care, frankly.
Like, I think there's truth to that. It's like the Kuzma effect a little bit.
Yeah, so I think those players are a tad overrated, where when they make good plays, the garden goes nuts. We see the replays. Everyone, like NBA Twitter is exploding because there's a million Knicks fans. And it's just like, okay, they're interesting young players who, at least in the case of Quickley, are still pretty inefficient. And I don't know what they are in the NBA. So I also just don't have a ton of fun watching this team play basketball games. And I feel like there is a lot to learn when you watch them, because you want to see if they can figure it out. You want to see if Tibbs is going to switch up the lineup. You want to see this, that, the other. You want to see if Julius Randle can kind of bounce back to a little bit closer to what he was last year. But I was a little down on that being a possibility. You want to see RJ Barrett. You want to see RJ Barrett grow. He's been okay, I guess. Whatever.
He's been inconsistent, not John still, though.
Yeah. Not John Morant. Not Zion Williamson. Although that's not looking great. But yeah, just not. You know, just I can't get that excited about.
I hear
the New York Knicks. We did it, Chris. We folded an email in. We gave our listeners, our wonderful listeners, our three favorite teams. So six favorite teams, I think. Maybe five. Maybe there was some overlap. Our least favorite teams definitely weren't six, but there were a bunch. And I hope this, you know, I hope this helps all of you as we head into the weekend and gives you a little bit more of a clear focus on who you want to watch and who you should avoid. Thank us. Thank us, actually, by sending in emails. That would be great. Openfloormail@gmail.com. Openfloormail@gmail.com. And we want to hear who your favorite teams are and who your least favorite teams are. And we'll do our best to read those emails on an episode next week. But until then, I hope everybody stays safe. And I hope everybody continues to enjoy this NBA season.
How do people feel about getting Big Fitness Energy at Planet Fitness for $15 a month? They feel as thrilled as a kid the first summer they're tall enough to ride the roller coaster. That's right. When you join Planet Fitness right now, you get access to tons of equipment and free fitness training in a clean and spacious club. Don't wait. Join the judgment-free zone today for that all-day energy. Download the free Planet Fitness app and join today for $15 a month.
Hurry. Deal ends September 12th. Join today for $15 a month.
See Home Club for details.